I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Plugin Boutique and iZotope have hooked up to offer you, dear listener, an absolutely banging deal. They've combined Softcube's App Room plugin suite of amps, effects, and cabs with iZotope's Element suite of mixing, fixing, and mastering tools. All for 80 quid, or $94 or 94 euros. That's £217 less than if you were to purchase the plugins individually. The idea behind the bundle is to provide you with everything you need for at-home studio-based guitar production, including amp simulators, multiple effects units, and high-quality mixing and mastering tools. Pretty much exactly what every guitar nerd needs. Now, iZotope plugins have been friends of the podcast for many years. You're listening to the production quality of iZotope's Nectar, RX, and Ozone every time you listen to an episode of Guitar Nerds. Their Element Suite offers assistive technology to cut down the guesswork and required expertise to get release quality recordings. And Softcube's Amp Room offers a really comprehensive range of bass and guitar amps, cabs, and effects. In fact, that's what you're listening to right now. Go check out this incredible bundle at Plugin Boutique. com or follow links in the description of this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branson, joined this week by Matt Knight.
I'm drinking a beer.
And Jay Cross.
I'm drinking peach squash in sparkling water.
Ah, that's nice. I've set myself up with a few drinks because I know it's an hour podcast, so I know it's going to take that time. No, not like that. As in, I have a nice lemon water. Jay, you recently recommend that I drink more water, so I've been drinking a lot of water, so I've got some water with a little
life
slice
hack.
Of lemon.
Yeah, life hack.
You want to live longer?
keep your ear to the ground here, kids, because I tell you what.
So I've got one of those. I've got a green tea. I've got a nice green tea, and I have a small Oban scotch.
So you've got four drinks in front of you.
Three drinks. Water with lemon in, a green tea, and an Oban scotch.
Right.
Which
okay.
I'll drink the scotch first.
then the green tea chaser.
Yes.
Yeah, then maybe the water at some point in the next year.
Yeah.
No, it'd be good. I've been, you know, got to get that water. It's actually made a big difference, Jay. I don't know, I'm having to go to the toilet a lot more, but, you know, I feel good for drinking water.
I can just imagine, like, the imaginary people inside your body working your organs just being like, oh, my God, we're not prepared for this.
Yes, it's weird for me too.
So how much water are you drinking then?
I don't know, man. Like, you know, quite a few. I've got these like oversized wine glasses, and I pop a little slice of lemon in every morning. I'm topping that up all the time. I reckon I'm doing, I don't know, 6-7 of those a day. It's good.
Nice.
It's good.
So that's probably you know, 2 and a bit liters. That's good.
Right. It's a great way to not drink booze, actually, to always have a water. Like, you don't feel, you know, when you get thirsty and you want a beer, instead I'm having a water. It's a good life hack for me.
I've got like a water bottle, like a 750ml reusable water bottle that I just have with me basically all the time. And I do probably 4 or 5 of those a day, just like constantly refilling it. But
I then like...
It's just, but it's easy because, like, you know, I work at home and the toilet's right there. So it's, you know, you can't do it. You can't really do it if you're out and about all the time. But yeah, I definitely feel a lot better. It's something that I started trying to do when we went into lockdown, just to make sure I wasn't, like, you know, annihilating myself. And yeah, it does make you feel a lot better. Drinking water.
It is a good idea. Maybe that should be our next piece of merch, a Guitar Nerds water bottle.
Oh, that's a great idea.
No.
We could do them in a two-pack so you can have them when you're out and about. So one filled with water and one for when, you know, the water's passed through.
What, so you refill it?
Well, maybe we could put a filter in. Kevin Costner had a little filter, didn't he?
In Waterworld.
In Waterworld, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't a little, that was like a full-on chemistry set.
It was quite complicated, but, you know, it was good. He had a bit of it. Set. He fed his plant a little bit of it. I'll look into it. Maybe it's something we can do. Maybe Kevin Costner's like something, about.
It looks like something that came from the Zvex custom shop.
That's true. Maybe
you
we
know
could
that
have
candle
one
powered pedal
what
that
was
they
it
did.
Called? Was it called the candelabra?
It was the candelabra. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I think of. That I mean, that's kind of what I think of when I think of that pedal. Is that scene in Waterworld?
I wonder if that should be the next thing that Zachary Vex makes, like a you know, some sort of filtering effect pedal that you could, you know, provide some fluid on, and it would.
I suppose that's what the
mini bar
Ranger mini bar, yeah,
yeah,
worked on viscosity of the fluid.
Very weird. Very weird. Very cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Very cool. But yes, you know, anyway, dear listener, speaking of, no, there's no segue there. That's terrible. But we, I mentioned it a lot on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, this week just gone. Ashdown had a pop-up shop. Ashdown and Meters Headphones had a pop-up shop on Denmark Street in London, the heart of rock and roll in the UK, I think. And, you know, so it was wonderful to get to be there. I got to sort of hang out at the shop for a couple of days. And on one night during the week, we had kind of an event where we launched an amplifier. We had artists down to play. We had Ashdown beers. We had, you know, canapes and stuff like that. And a lot of celebrity guests. You know, and we all got to go along, which was a whole bunch of fun. I had a really good time. Matt, it was lovely to see you there.
Oh, you know, always out there for you, Joe, looking at your failures, past, present and future. No, it was very good. Yeah. It was very good. It's always nice to go to Denmark Street. And always just, I always have my first memory of Denmark Street properly, which I don't know how I heard of it. I guess it was an advert in probably like Total Guitar or Guitarist magazine. But yeah, I remember a day trip to London with a friend and family. And yeah, went to Denmark Street, Soho Soundhouse, second floor. Bought myself a Line 6 FM4. Was way too much money. Had to write a check.
Your life has never been the same since.
It's never been
you
the
wrote
same
a
since.
Check.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, this was like, what, 2003? People still had checks then.
Wow.
Yeah, so I remember writing a check. Remember making a signature and then querying my signature, and I was like, I don't know, I'm like 14. Don't have to write my signature on very often, do I? Yeah, and I just remember it being a crazy street, and then not gone very often since I've moved to London, but every time I go, it's obviously like diminished somewhat. Although there is one new store on there, 66 Sounds on the End, is there, which I think is for former employee of Macari's. But of course, Macari's closed their door, you know.
Well, they've just relocated, of course.
But
where have they moved? I can't remember. It doesn't
matter. Haywood Teeth, I think, isn't it?
Haywood Teeth, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just, I can't remember who I was saying it to, but you just can't imagine what that street must have been like in like 1959, I think, when like the first music store opened. And then within 10 years, you know, that was the music scene for kind of like the whole, not just the UK, but like the whole of Europe. It was like the mecca of guitar, and all the studios there where all the stuff was recorded, and like none of that exists anymore. And I think old GAC customer, friend of the podcast, Ray Russell, studio legend, was actually part of a documentary that I think was supposed to be happening or coming out, saw him post about telling a lot of the history and a lot of the session work. He spent a lot of his time in the 60s and 70s doing a lot of session work on there. But yeah, just very, very crazy. And the people, I guess, growing up and playing guitar today will never know of that street. It's a real shame.
What, do you know what the first guitar shop was that opened there?
I have a feeling it was Rose Morris, which is still there. I think Macari's was 1964. Because obviously, and then you had, what's his name, Cliff Cooper had a street on there, Orange. Yeah. So I don't know.
Orange do still hire a little space.
They do, yeah.
Somewhere where next to Stairway to Kevin, around there, Aid has his own little area where I think is a little studio where I think that's where they filmed their Blast Cult, the Orange Blast Cult custom shop guitar hybrids that they did. I think they shot the videos for them there.
Here's a little bit of information. Lawrence Wright, because I think the street was also a space for music publishing. So Lawrence Wright was the first music publisher to set up premises on Denmark Street in 1911. He subsequently founded the Musician's Journal Melody Maker in 1926. And
it's funny, like Melody Maker is where you see all of these, you know, that's where so many of these bands in the 60s and 70s, like that's where you went to go and find members. And I've seen adverts from the 70s being like, oh, looking for sax player to join our ska band, like Cool Suggs or whatever. And like, oh, looking for a guitar player to join new pub rock band, Cool Johnny Rotten or whatever. And it's like, you know, basically all of these, you know, not the Sex Pistols, but like loads of these iconic bands just found members through Melody Maker. It's really funny, really, really weird when you see those things in real life.
Mm. But yeah, I think there's a lot of history there, and I think you can a lot read about Sex Pistols rehearsed there for the first time somewhere on Denmark Street. Elton John wrote
And only time, probably.
Yeah, Elton John wrote his first hit single on Denmark Street. A lot of big history, but I don't know.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think there was a really famous cafe there, which, I mean, imagine walking to a cafe and seeing... just looking here, David Bowie, The Small Faces, Jimi Hendrix. I was just walking into a coffee shop in like the 60s.
Just all sat there. Wow.
Just all sat there, just hanging out.
I've been speaking of Sex Pistols, I've been listening to Sex Pistols quite a lot recently. I was speaking to a friend about, a Dutch friend, about the Sex Pistols a few months ago. And it came up, and British people, I think in general, kind of just roll our eyes at the Sex Pistols a little bit because it's like, oh, this sort of joke band, whatever. Like, it was all just a little bit too try hard, blah, 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 blah. And I was speaking to my friend who grew up in the Netherlands, and he was like, we didn't get that at all. Like, for us, the Sex Pistols, and for like lots of people in Europe, the Sex Pistols, like the kind of... the pastiche that a lot of British people saw with them, that didn't translate. And for us, it was just like, wow, this music is unbelievable. This is like nothing I've ever heard before. And I kind of went back and listened to, you know, I mean, I bought Nevermind the Bollocks when I was a about 13, and I went back and listened to it like the whole way through fairly recently, and it's so good. Like, it's so, so good. When you kind of listen to it with just fresh ears, and you listen to it kind of ignoring all the zeitgeist around the band, and you know, all the kind of all the controversies and just like the kind of like the fact that they turned into a bit of a cartoon character, a group of cartoon characters. Like, the record is so good, and some of the guitar playing is fantastic. It sounds wicked. So I, yeah, like, really interesting getting the take of someone from outside the UK on that band, because it really changed my mind on it.
It's kind of a good point. I can't think, like, you know, the same as you. Last time I listened to that record would have been years and years ago. And yeah. I don't think I've ever listened to it without everything that was associated with it. So it would be, yeah, it would be good to come back to it now and kind of try and listen to it, as you said, with fresh ears and without considering any of that. Like, taking it for music and seeing how,
yeah,
it,
completely.
How it fares.
And, you know, yes, they were kind of this, to a degree, this, like, manufactured band or whatever. But, like, they really were doing stuff that hadn't properly been done before. You know, there was like pub rock, which was similar to this. And obviously the Ramones were playing really fast and doing some great stuff a couple of years earlier in New York. But like in the UK, it wasn't, people weren't really doing it. And sure, it might have taken this almost kind of, cartoon-esque stereotype of, okay, this is what punk is now, to sort of drive it forward. But I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people my age, definitely kind of have a lot of reservations about the Sex Pistols, because we got into the Sex Pistols because you were supposed to like the Sex Pistols if you were a punk.
Yeah.
Or they were like an easy band to get into. But our parents just always thought it was just so silly. Yeah. That my kind of memory of it was tainted, but I think that record is well worth another listen. It's, yeah, some absolutely great songs on that record.
Well, I will revisit it. Now you know, coming back to Denmark Street, Matty, did you get a chance to pop out amongst the other shops at all before you came and hung out with me at the Ashdown pop up shop?
I was too busy being social, Joe.
Really? Oh, wow. How about that?
Oh, you know, lots of people, you know, you know, talking, handing out business cards. No, stealing, stealing yourselves. No, no, I didn't. But I had gone round fairly recently, and I realised that it is only like 40 minutes from my house, like door to door.
Dude, I'd be there every day.
Yeah, I think I have been there, and the last few times I've been there, the shops to go to see something maybe a little bit different than like Hank's, No Tom. I do like Region Sounds. It's really good looking dealer, and they do a lot of Fender and they do a lot of Gretsch, which is really, really cool. One Joe's,
what about One Joe? One Joe's is good.
Yeah, although One Joe's opposite Rose Morris, which is where you had the shop, is closed, but it's moved somewhere else. I don't know where it's moved to.
It's not moved. It's still on that street. It's that they've shut one of the shops. One Joe's at their, you know, when they were at their strongest, I think they owned like three of the shops
they
on
did,
that street.
Yeah.
So they've just kept the one that's in the middle. It's almost opposite No Tom's.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
That's where the One Joe's that is open. I really like One Joe's because One Joe's tends to have, you know, dear listener, if you're not familiar with these shops, then No Tom and Hank's. No Tom are very good at very rare vintage gear. Hank's are very good at very rare vintage gear that cost over 10 grand. And One Joe's manages to have cool, unusual stuff, but often without the price tag. Like, you'll find a cool, weird K or a Harmony or, you know, some transistor high watt amp that they made for a year in the 70s. You know, it's that sort of place. You find rare oddities in One Joe's.
Yeah. Actually, last time I was within One Joe's was quite about, I want to say, 3 years ago. And it was actually with Nick Reinhardt and Juan Aldrete.
Oh, wow.
And we were looking at some weird...
Where did you guys go when you... You know, what caught Nick's eye in Denmark Street?
Well, we went because Juan had been there before. and remembered One Joe's, and they always had some quirky bases, and he was down there trying a... Oh... Some quirky brand that you'd like, Joe. I can't some remember.
Quirky brand.
Okay. Yeah. I think we went there and then we went for beers. But I don't think that... I don't think Nick had ever been, but I think Juan had been before.
Right.
So we
right,
thought we'd I take see. A look. But yeah, it's... I guess it's a shame because it wasn't the glory that it was, especially what I remember like 20 years ago. But
I do think people focus on that a lot. Like there's still some amazing
there's still some
stuff.
Great shops there. I think the problem is it's one side of the street. It's like a building site and it sort of doesn't have the kind of prettiest feel to it. It is still in the midst of a building site. And I think once it's all done, I think it will be a great hub once again. Mr. Mark Packham was saying that they've actually built a venue underneath the street.
That's right.
It's like a three-floored and underground, like it goes under the street, like 2,500 capacity venue, which is very cool. So no doubt bringing some more music back. And I think, yeah, there'll be an influx of people moving into that area. I mean, it's so well connected. You're 5 minutes walk from Soho, Leicester Square, Chinatown, and that is a great
Oxford Circus.
Yeah, it's a great place, like in London. It really is in the hub. But yeah, if you want to go and see some sort of stuff that you wouldn't normally see from most other guitar shops because people just wouldn't trade it in or they just don't deal in that, it's definitely good for that. On a side note, if you did want to go to a similar street, and I was reminded of this the other day, I think someone posted about it on Instagram. And it does have a name, but I can't remember. There's a street in Paris that's like 40 guitar shops. And I did a guy that I work with actually took me there. And I was like, he didn't explain it was like the guitar street. And I was like, so many guitar shops here. This is weird. And a very, very similar vibe to Denmark Street as well. So, if you're ever in France.
Yes, the area is called Pigalle, Pigalle. And that's where like all the there's like a load of music shops there. It's the whole and they're all like there's lots of like specialized shops there. There's like a left-handed shop and there's a pedal shop and all sorts. I've not been, but I've heard it's really cool. Really, really cool.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad. Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 40 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in a collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad has developed the Keep It Simple setup. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anybody can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, loads of how-to videos, as well as complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare and kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple setup.
Very cool. Well, I did get the chance to pop around the shops on the day before we had the event on the Wednesday. So I went round to actually just, inviting everyone to the party on Thursday, but also to, to check out their incredible wares. And I saw some fantastic stuff. In fact, actually, before I go into that, on the Wednesday, who should show up in the Ashdown shop but Yogi the guitarist? Came in to see me with Gary from Stairway to Kevin. Matt, I don't know if you use Stairway to Kevin, right?
Spoke for them a few times on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Great
absolutely.
Guys.
But yes, Yogi and Gary popped in to say hi, which was lovely. Yogi had brought in this parts caster that he's been working on. Dear listener, I don't know if you've seen it on his Instagram or maybe shared on the Guitar Nerds group, but it's a... It's a satin black Telecaster with like a single ply scratch, and then it's a solid rosewood neck, but it is thicker than it is the thickest neck I've ever seen. It makes a 52 Tele look, you know, like a Ibanez. it's an incredible baseball bat of a neck. It's absolutely ridiculous. And he's got
what had he done? Had he brought that along to like take it to the Shard or something, somewhere where there's loads and loads of stairs, just to like really needing to step it up?
Probably, yeah. I think he was having it set up. Oh, that's right. He was having the nut redone. I think Gary was redoing the nut because he'd set it up with, I think he said, 12s. And I think he said D standard. So Gary was just sorting out the nut for that, which I thought was funny because most of my guitars have 12s and are in D standard. I have never redone a nut on any of them. So, you know, I didn't really know that would ever be a thing. But he played, you know, they both sat down and sort of played the guitar through the little Ashdown Peacemaker minis, which, you know, we'll talk about in a bit. But, you know, it was lovely to kind of to see them and get to hang out with them. And here's incredible Tele. The best part about that Tele, Creamery pickups. And in the bridge, normal Tele looking pickup, but it's a P90, which I haven't seen yet. I've been meaning to check it out on the Creamery website. But Creamery, a brand who that like they're all of their stuff looks fantastic. It's very simple, like a relatively small catalog in comparison to a lot of other pickup makers, and also a relatively traditional palette of stuff. Like, it's not just trying to make things look weird or something ludicrously high output or anything like that. A fairly sort of conservative range of traditional pickups, but oh man, a P90 without, you know, without having to sacrifice those classic Tele looks. I'm into that. That's a great option. But yes.
Yeah, I'm just having a look on their website now. They do make some really good stuff. Really, really cool looking stuff as well. Especially for offsets. They've got some nice Jaguar pickups.
That was where I think they kind of made their name a little bit, was doing like Jazzmaster pickups. Because I just feel like for ages, when we were at GAC, there was just hardly anything you could get in terms of replacement pickups for Jazzmaster. You know, the ones that came in the American guitar, in the American Jazzmasters were like American Vintage 65s, and you could buy them. But a lot of the time people already had them and they wanted to change them out for something else. And I think Seymour Duncan maybe did some Antiquities. But yeah, other than that,
it's still slim pickings, isn't it? Yeah, I remember it being the same.
Well, I think it's a lot better now. You know, there's a whole host of Fender aftermarket Jazzmaster pickups now, but like that's all fairly recent, and I think that the Creamery really that was certainly where, like I say, that was where I kind of heard of them first of all, was people coming into GAC and saying like, oh, I've seen these, you know, do you do these Creamery pickups? And it's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, mate. But yeah, they do some really cool stuff. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, really good. And they've been around a long time. I need to get that. They need to be the next pickup brand that I get on board with, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
What were you going to say,
Mike? Oh, I was going to say, just we're talking of offsets. I've recently become a member of the Jazzmaster Jaguar and Offset Guitar Group on Facebook.
Oh, I'm on that.
And every day I am wowed by some of the offset guitars that people have. Lots of love for obviously the classic Fenders, but there are some people with some parts casters, and I'm
have
like,
you seen the fella who's been building like wallpaper topped jazz or offsets he seems to have done a few of them now, and they always look amazing.
Yeah, there's some amazing stuff.
That's
on there.
Paisley is.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh no, so, yeah. Aware of
so
that.
So really, you can do it with anything. I remember seeing there was some Fender Japan, like Paisleys, where they used, I think it was like, traditional Japanese, like wallpaper. And it was amazing. They looked absolutely astonishing. It's a shame that never really, I think with all of these things, it's just, it's got such niche appeal, like even Paisley anything wallpaper, because you know you have to cover it with such thick lacquer, and I think that puts a lot of people off, which is a shame because I think they look astonishing.
That's obviously the classic one of those is the Steve Vai Floral Gem, which is wallpaper
not wallpaper, actually like curtains underneath. It's like some sort of flowery material. Yeah. And they go for like crazy, crazy money. I think the official model is, I think it was just called, Gem 77 FP, the floral print. About $4,000 if you want to try and buy one secondhand now. But yeah, the original ones were like a curtain, a fabric underneath.
And Chris Squire, the... Chris Squire, the bass player from Yes, his Rickenbacker 4001 was for a while a wallpaper finish. And when he eventually took it off and he had it just refinished in like a vintage blonde, it was so sort of caked in there that it took loads of the wood with it and they had to kind of reshape it. Not to a different shape, but as in they had to sand the whole thing down. So the entire guitar was thinner and lighter and kind of more angled than an ordinary Rickenbacker 4001, which is why when they did the Chris Squire signature model, they reverse engineered it, found that it was a different shape. And that was what was, you know, contributing to its weight and things like that. So they had to completely retool for the Chris Squire. There you go.
That is mad.
It was mad. They totally ruined it though, because the Chris Squire was vintage blonde. It just looked like a cool old Ricky, but because, you know, he was now an old dude rather than like a cool dude in Yes's heyday, he was like, yeah, can I also have it in black with blue flames? So he's he ruined his signature, but it was cool. But on my travels around Denmark Street, I saw some cool stuff. Yeah, I went into Wonjo, found a lovely, I think it was a 65, a 1965 Dan Electro Longhorn bass with that lovely sort of leatherette wrap that goes around the whole thing.
What colour? Like the brown colour?
Copper burst. That traditional copper burst. Oh, everything about it looked absolutely
just
gorgeous,
like them.
Properly worn. No, I toy with it often, but the reissues, they're not, I guess they're faithfully made in that they're pretty cheaply, you know, put together, and the controls only work so well. I guess I couldn't imagine myself trusting it.
Embrace your inner fat mic, Joe. Yeah. Come on. You got to do it. Embrace it. Play Linoleum. You can do it. I believe in you.
Well, he used the short horn, and he also had a 34-inch scale version, and he actually changed the bridge as well. He popped a proper sort of like Fender-esque bridge, not Fender, but like a high mass bridge.
So
he changed the tuners as well. He got rid of the sort of little button tuners and changed them for kind of a large sort of Y tuners on there. He basically did everything to sort of make it as close to not one of those bases as possible.
Yeah,
while
but aren't
still
you just
getting
saying
the
that, like, you kind of need to do that to make it
I mean, I occasionally every now and again that Dynelectron, I don't know if you remember, I did a brand of the week like maybe 4 years ago on them, but Dynelectron did, I think they were Italian, and they did like high quality Dan Electros. Every now and again one pops up and I think about it, but you know, most of the time the people that own them know that what they have is rare and good quality, and so they tend to be they tend to be like a bit of a commitment as far as a price point goes. But
gotcha.
But, you know, it was lovely to see a copper burst Longhorn. It was very cool. Of course, Wonjo always have, I don't know entirely what the deal is, I don't know if either of you do, but Wonjo seem to deal quite tightly with Eco, or Echo.
Okay.
It's supposed to be said Echo.
I think it's Echo. I think it's Echo.
It makes sense to say Echo. I think I've only said it in my head, so I'm saying Echo, but it's clearly Echo. Now I'm saying it out loud. But they, of course, they do like the new from old part Vox teardrops and stuff like that. So Wonjo always has kind of a range of teardrops, which is great because they all look like fantastic old teardrops. Like, you know, there'll be newly finished, but they're weighty, properly built Old
Fox. And again, you can like play it properly.
Yeah, well, they're still sort of vintage, you know, pickups and vintage scales and string spacing. So they're still a bit weird, but yeah, they're in good condition at least, and they tend to be like around a grand, which is very good for something that's kind of old parts. So, you know, one of those.
It's funny that guitar's like the most annoying guitar to like stop playing. You know what I mean? You're fine.
Can't
as long
your
as
left
you're...
hand off.
No. You're fine as long as you're playing it. As long as you're playing it, yeah. But then as soon as you, if you're sitting down, it just falls over straight away. Or if you go and like, you know, put it on the floor, you've got to make sure you've got a stand because it will just fall over immediately because they're just, you know, they're so annoying.
Yeah. It was they're very cool. I think about them often, but One Jones was fantastic for that. And I went into No Tom, and of course they have No Tom have some really, really fantastic stuff. The stock tends to be very random. Like there was a fantastic, gorgeous, like shell pink Birdtown telly. I'd never even heard of Birdtown before, but it was relatively well priced and cool and shell pink. But the thing that really caught my eye in No Tom was the shell pink Ibanez Iceman with a mint and sort of sonic blue angled stripe running across the guitar.
Sounds like you've just described a really fancy ice cream. You go at an Iceman and you're like, yeah, it's sort of like it's like pink, it's got this fancy swirl on it. I'm like, that sounds good, I'll pay $3.99 for that.
So what was it, what type of Iceman was it? Was it a bolt-on or was it a neck?
It was
through?
A bolt-on. No, it was a bolt-on.
So it's one of the, so it would have been the 300, maybe, is that what they
possibly,
were the Iceman The Iceman 300, I think, were the bolt-ons. They were the more affordable ones.
Right. With this one, it's certainly coming in at $695, and that is an unusual finish.
It sounds amazing.
Oh, I was very close to purchasing it for you, Jay. I reckon if it had been like sort of $695 was just outside of the sort of gimmick joke gift price point, I think. So, you know, like a couple of £100 less, and I think I would have got that for you. But
that's really nice of you, Joe.
You're not worth $695 to me.
No, not worth $695. Well, that's fine. I mean, you know, you're not worth £6.95. No, that's not true. No, I would definitely buy you a pint for £6.95, but maybe not £7.
thank you. But you know, on the note of kind of like weird finish things in No Tom, I always go in there and I'm like, right, you know, I'm looking around for that 5, 7, 10 grand Gibson or Fender, something that's been like gigged to buggery, like it's really worn in. I love that you get all those random things there, but that was not what I found this time round. Weird finish things is what I did find this time round, including a pair of Gretsch Traveling Wilbury guitars, which I knew nothing about. I didn't even know what they were called until I posted a picture, on the Guitar Nerds group, being like, look at these sort of Gretsch style things with these weird finishes. Aren't they cool? And someone mentioned that it was a Traveling Wilbury guitar.
So yeah, no, I didn't know anything about this either, I guess. So were they guitars that they used, or were they
that's it. So before Gretsch kind of made its return to full-scale guitar production in the late 80s, they needed to raise some money, and they did a marketing tie-in with the Traveling Wilburys supergroup to, you know, to create the opportunity. So, you know, Jeff Lynne, George Harrison, Tom Petty, Roy Orbison and Bob Dylan were photographed with their signatures. Their signatures were for their aliases within that band, obviously. The idea is, you know, Gretsch could, you know, sell these as sort of future collectibles. But, you know, that it never really happened because they were, you know, they made an awful lot of them and they were very low priced basic instruments. So they've not, so whilst I think collectors hoarded them initially, they've never really become that thing of legends that I think that people hoped they would. I mean, they did the job for Gretsch because, you know, it allowed Gretsch to get a foothold back in guitar manufacture, But yeah, they were just functional, cheap, interestingly finished guitars. But
did you try one when you were there?
I didn't. It's a very small shop, and there were quite a few people in there at the time.
Right. Okay.
But I think the one that really caught my eye was the TW100T, which is their it's a short scale, a very sort of short scale single cut with just a single coil in the bridge and a single volume control in a gorgeous, so the burst is like white from the edges and then it's like all oranges, greens and blues sort of splattered across the instrument with a matching white headstock. But
yeah, really weird. I found one up for sale here for like £300.
Really?
Seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, one of the comments was that you often get neck problems with these guitars. I mean, I guess that's just something that is true of a lot of cheaply made instruments, I suppose. But yeah, I thought it was super cool. I'd definitely consider. There was no price on that one. The larger one that had a humbucker, similar thing, but a larger body shape, had a humbucker in the bridge, and I think they had it priced up for around £800.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, really cool, really interesting, different looking guitars. Definitely something that I'd like to see if I can at least have a go on.
Yeah,
looks like a cool thing to have sitting around the house in any way.
It's weird. Again, it's like they've kind of put a print on it, and I don't know whether it's, I guess it must be printed on, and then yeah, just burst around the edges. Done that white burst around the edges. Super, really? Super weird. Very cool. Super. No, I've not seen this before. Wasn't aware
exactly.
of them.
No, exactly. Weird. Good, you know, considering, I guess, that loads were made, who they were made for, you know, I'd expect to have seen some, have some knowledge on what they are, but no, it was a first for me. But the thing I really love about No Tom as well is the effects cabinets. They always have some great stuff. And Matt, I think I showed you, they had one of the old big box, like huge, mahoosive box, Electro Harmonics Octave multiplexers.
Yeah, I do love those old big box Electro Harmonics pedals. I mean, I was cleaning out the loft the other day and I remembered I have the old wooden box for my Deluxe Memory Man. I'm like, this was cool packaging. I mean, it was also terrible packaging because remember working.
Yeah, they broke.
They basically put no bubble wrap in them and then shipped them from America or China or wherever. And by the time they got, they just like smashed to pieces. But it was a cool idea. The first Electro Harmonics pedal I bought was a Russian small stone that came in that wooden box. And I can still remember that woody smell of that.
Yeah,
it's very, very, very cool. It's a shame they discontinued it. I guess the last pedal I had in a wooden box was Chase Bliss.
Wow.
And obviously they've stopped doing that now because I think they've also realised expensive and highly impractical.
Yeah, exactly. What have you got in the old big box things at the moment? You've got a Memory Man
and a Big Muff. That's about it. Right. Although I've
got the Phaser.
The small stone. I would like a small stone. I think, to be honest, no one is going to trump Al Lawson, friend of the podcast. Podcast listener Al Lawson, I think he's just got a ridiculous Electro Harmonics collection, all the stuff. And they're stupidly expensive now. Like, if you're going to buy a Deluxe Memory Man, you might as well buy the new mini one that they've launched, which I guess maybe we'll talk about later.
The multiplexer was, I think it was £135 in No Tom, which I don't think is a lot.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the one that you've got.
No.
I thought you meant like you bought it for that sort of money. That does seem very reasonable.
Because what is it?
About buying it.
It's an analog octave pedal, right? If I remember right. Yes. Sub-octave generator.
Yeah, it's just sub. So it was just the sub side of a POG, I think. A mini POG.
Yeah, something like that. Because it's got two filters as well, hasn't it? So there's a high filter and a bass filter. And I think, you can just get... I don't know if it actually shifts things down an octave or... Because there's a sub-switch on the more modern one. And I don't know if that actually switches an octave in and off. I'm not 100%.
Me neither. But to be honest, I didn't care what it did. You know, it was just the old big box Electro Harmonics. They just look so cool.
Cool and breaky. As soon as you step on that...
and breaky.
I was messing around by Deluxe Mirror Man the other day, and I was like, normally it's in a switcher, and I was like, oh, I was just like plugging it in, and I sort of like went to step on it, and I'm like, just the big toe, just carefully just pressing that switch in. I'm like, the money that those Deluxe Mirror Mans go for now
just like, there is absolutely no way I want to break it. Although, thankfully, they're relatively easy inside, so a switch can be, you know, replaced. But at the same time, like, I really don't want to break this. Now they're going for about...
You're not gonna go full J Cross and
just put your foot through it in just, a gig.
Yeah, middle of a show. I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast so many times, but yeah, I was using one of the old big box. I totally forgot about this.
Holier Grail?
Holiest.
No, you didn't have the Holiest. The Holiest was the black one with the sliders. I think maybe you did have that one.
No, it was the Holier in that case, because it only had a couple of controls on it. But I remember so vividly, I mean, I'm still like quite leggy, but on that tour, I was doing this like, that sort of emo hardcore band, and I was just singing and I had my vocals going through this reverb pedal, and I was like going through, I don't know, it's just like, yeah, really leggy, really flamboyant, and I just like threw my leg up in the air as high as I could go and then slammed it down onto the pedal, and unsurprisingly my foot went straight through the pedal.
You're like 6'4".
I'm not that tall, but like it just like, yeah, of course it's broken. And I'd done it a few times during the tour, and then that one was just like, oh, okay, well, that's the end. I have no idea where that pedal ended up. I think I gave it to someone and they were like, yeah, I'll fix it for you. And then I just never got it back. I don't really remember, but...
Oh, so depressing.
Yeah. But yes, very breaky, so you've got to be careful with them.
I did have a Holiest Grail, and now...
So what was the... You said it was black. I don't remember it at all, the Holiest. I remember there being like the Mac. And the
no,
what
this
called?
Is this is before, this is before that. So, yeah. Oh, actually, that just reminded me. I do have another big box pedal because I've got a Holy Grail, which has a really iffy switch. Unsurprisingly, talked about. It's like sometimes you turn it on, it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Best thing to do is never turn it off. But that is a great reverb. The Holy Grail. So they had the Holy Grail, which came in their kind of small metal plated box, sheet metal box, and that was their reverb with the one control. Then they had the Holier Grail, which was the same size as the like the Poly Chorus and the Deluxe Memory Man.
Just having a look at this, like the thing that always freaked me out about it, and I completely understand it now, but obviously, you know, whenever I had this, so it would have been like 2010, 2011. So I'd only been working at GAC for a year or so. And looking back on it, it's like, it's clear my issue was with the gate. Like I didn't understand what gated reverb was. And one of the big things about the Holier Grail is it's got like two controls for the gated gate. And I just remember sometimes using it, just being like, why is this not working? Why does this sound so rubbish? And it's like, you just had to have the gate set to off and then it would just be, you'd be fine. But yeah, clearly I was just not really paying attention. I mean, just not learning how to use the gear, basically.
Just not understanding life, reverb. But yeah, so yeah, the Holy Grail was one reverb control with Spring Hall and Flurb. And then the Holier Grail was Spring Hall, Flurb and gate, and I think it had a gate control on it as well, if I remember rightly.
Spring Hall, Flurb and Room.
Oh, Room. But it had
the gate control, and it had like so you've got the gate control, you could change, so it was just the reverb and the direct signal or off, and then you had a gate threshold control, and then you've also got the an option for long and short, and you could reverse the gate as well.
Ooh.
So like, I mean, obviously I didn't know what the bloody hell I was doing with it, so when I used it often it sounded rubbish, which is probably why I was a bit annoyed with it, but just learn how to use your stuff and you're fine. Don't go down the Matt Knight route.
Read that manual.
It's probably on the EHX website still.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Oh my God, this is up at £380.
Oh dear, Jay. Told you.
Good Lord.
Well,
that is crazy.
You need to find that mate of yours.
Oh, no idea where it went, mate. oh my goodness. Like just looking at like, I'm just on Reverb, the prices have just shot up recently, but like, yeah, the last few have gone for 200. Well, I mean, it's sort of all over the place. £230 for a new one, for a mint one, 100, 120, 100 quid, 150 quid, 150 quid. So actually that one that I was looking at before is probably just like a bit speculative, but even so, yeah, that last one sold just a week ago for like over 200 quid. That's
wow.
God, dear, honestly, what is what a stupid idiot.
But yeah, and then after that, you had the Holiest Grail, which I think I had at some point, and I wish I still had, because these are pretty pretty damn rare now, by the looks of it. But the Holiest Grail was, rather than having four reverb algorithms and then, you know, like usual decay controls, this was one spring and one hall, I think, that you could mix together in a mixer. So you had an output mixer section, which was three sliders, dry, spring, and reverb. You then had a reverb section, which was decay, damping, and diffusion. Then you had your pre-delay, which was time and feedback with an input gain. And this was way before your Strymons and everyone knew what decay and damping was. I think I had one and was a bit like, I don't really understand this. And it had MIDI, which for a guitar pedal that came out in, 2000? I mean, pretty out there. It also had an expression pedal input, so you could sweep between all of the settings. Obviously came in a massive box, had two presets on the front. I think you could have eight presets total. Yeah, really cool. Basically, impossible to find. And as I said that, I've just found one for sale in the US for $350. So yeah, one of those ones. I must admit, I would be torn between that or a 16-second delay. And actually, if you go to Electronics website, they've got it in their archive. Their last post about it was in 2005 with Nick Zinner from the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs going, yeah, I've got a Pog and a Holiest Grail. I'm like, those were the days. The dream days. Yeah,
those were the days.
Well, I mean, for you, that's still today.
That is like, still today.
About, those were the days.
But yeah, those...
a really funny article on the Catlin Bread website where... there's a section on there where they are just like talking about pedals, I guess. I've not noticed this before, but this is from earlier this year. It's from January 2021. And I guess this is one of the people from Catlin Bread just kind of like waxing lyrical about pedals that they like. And I'm just going to read you this section of the opening paragraph about the Holiest Grail. When you visit the Louvre, I mean, okay, first of all, you know we're going down a funny route here. When you visit the Louvre, you know you're going to see the Mona Lisa, the Winged Victory of Samothrace, and the Code of Hammurabi. Neither did I, but like, you know, when you visit the Louvre, you know you're going to see the glass pyramid that they talk about in Angels and Demons, the Dan Brown novel. That's what you know you're going to see. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. You're also going to see a ton of other things that you've likely never heard of. And you know, just because they aren't featured attractions doesn't mean they don't belong amongst the world's best. I lay this analogy at your feet as I present to you one of my absolute favorite pedals of all time, the Electro-Harmonix Holiest Grail. So I'm going to go back and read this later because that looks great. But I don't think I've ever seen one of these in real life, but it looks mad. It looks absolutely mad.
Yeah. I'm no authority on, Electro-Harmonix, but there was a really good episode of the JHS pedal show on YouTube where he met a friend of his who I want to say is called Derek Danger. I think that's his name. And okay. He's basically got the biggest collection of Electro-Harmonix pedals and merchandise probably in the world, including like some original like point of sale displays from like the 60s of like the Big Muff and stuff. And he's just saying that they just every month, or you know, he'll find something new that he didn't realize Electro-Harmonix made. Like they made stuff for short periods and like crazy like different finishes and things like that. And yeah, I think there's quite a few big box pedals out there you sort of forget existed, but they definitely had this kind of really out there period in the early 2000s, reissuing a lot of stuff from the 70s that I think was probably, again, just a bit before its time, you know.
Yeah.
And just going, yeah, if you release that now, people would be going, mad for it. But I think in 2005, you know, and 2006, we started working in GAC and you saw that. And then it was like a couple of hundred quid. You're like, that's expensive. No one's going to pay that for a reverb with MIDI. Who uses MIDI?
Yeah.
And now everyone's like, oh, yeah, I've realized now I need that like 20 years later. So can I pay like $500 for it? Thanks.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. What an incredible range of pedals.
Indeed.
Speaking of kind of like weird expansive effects, one of the brands that I saw that was fantastic at Notom, which we've spoken a bit about before, but it kind of reminded me of them, and I went back and wanted to look at the entire range, was Fairfield Circuitry, who makes some fantastic kind of unique, interesting stuff. Everything from Fairfield Circuitry has the same look. It's just a plain, you know, cast aluminium box with these large sort of black teardrop controls and then stamped text for what each control does. I love the aesthetic. I love the commitment to the simplicity of that. There's certainly, you know, this is a brand that was very based around their parts being very premium, because despite the fact that the artwork costs them virtually nothing, the price of these pedals is pretty premium.
As they put on their website, unique and robust, made in Quebec.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I like that these are built to be functional, and they do some really interesting stuff. Like if you look at their range, the horse door d'oeuvres, which is an active feedback loop. That's very cool. I love the fact that they have the Model B, which is an always on their drive called the Barbershop. So they have a Barbershop, which is their normal, quite functional, transparent overdrive, which just has volume, sag and drive. They put that into a kind of a mini pedal, horizontal mini pedal with no foot switch. So it is always on, still with the volume, drive and sag controls.
My favorite one of the range, and something I wanted for a very, very long time, and they've had this in their range for a very long time, because I remember Andy, Pro Guitar Shop Andy, demoing this a very long time ago, is Randy's Revenge, which is their ring modulator.
Ring mod, because
you know, you'd always go, what do I need on my pedal board that I don't have? Ring modulator. And this one always just sounded wicked.
It looks fantastic. I really like the look of they have a parametric EQ with a tilt, which they call the Long Life, which looks absolutely fantastic. There's so much on here that looks brilliant. I think I really want that always on Barbershop. It's very, very cool. But there's a fantastic range of stuff. They do a couple of fuzzes, the Unpleasant Surprise and the 900 as well. But really worth checking out, dear listener, at fairfieldcircuitry.com if you've not checked out the brand before. They do some very, very cool stuff indeed.
Yeah, definitely a brand we don't talk about very much, but they do make some good stuff. No.
They do. Now, you know, at this event on Denmark Street the next night, Matt, you came down. Jay, you were out seeing a friend of the podcast, Dan Grace.
Yes, I was, I'm afraid, otherwise exposed. No, mm-hmm. that isn't what I meant. Otherwise, I was busy.
You were busy.
I got my days mixed up, which I was annoyed about, because I wanted to come up and see you. But
Mark Hacker managed to tie in both.
He did both. But you know, the thing you've got to remember there is I have a job that I actually do. So he just like swanned up in the middle of the day, I guess. Yeah. So that's that. But I was very disappointed I couldn't come up. But you know.
It was good. Because, of course, one of the things we were doing there was we were launching. We've done this signature. Ashdown have done this signature head for Guy Pratt of Pink Floyd, the Interstellar.
Is that what it's called? So,
it's called the Interstellar. Obviously, after the track.
I'm massively Interstellar. Me, like, you know, three or four cans a night. Usually, bloody love it.
Right. Yes. It's called the Interstellar after the Pink Floyd.
I hope
track.
I've ruined that for you now.
you really have, yeah. Because Guy Pratt is fronting, he's singing and playing bass in Nick Mason's Sourceful of Secrets, which is Nick Mason, obviously also from Pink Floyd. It's essentially a cover band of Pink Floyd, but performing all the old stuff, all the 70s.
Basically Pink Floyd everything. Stuff. I think as I was talking to Lee, who's one of the guitar players, I think he was the one that came up with the original
concept. Lee Harris,
yeah. He was the one that came up with the original concept. And he's like, I want to do Pink Floyd songs, anything up to, but not beyond or including Dark Side of the Moon. And a lot of stuff they do is early Syd Barrett stuff as well. Kind of some of the more, not necessarily obscure if you're into Pink Floyd, but you're not going to be hearing Money, let's say that. or anything from The Wall. But yeah, very, very cool. And requires a very particular bass tone, I think, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's very, very vintage, isn't it? I mean, like, you know, what's Guy Pratt is very much known for his Betsy, his jazz bass, which he has a signature model version of. It's just he has a gorgeous Burgundy Mist 62 jazz bass that he has loaded with EMGs. There's a signature model of it made by Bass Collection at the moment with a similar vibe and the EMGs, but that's the bass he's known for. Obviously, he also has a signature model made by Status, a graphite bass. But for this, he's going very old school, which is very becoming of the music. So he's playing a Rickenbacker 4001 for the bulk of the set. And the amplifier is very much built around that. So a while ago, like Ashdown had made him a couple of cabs, made him 310s, vertical 310s with the tweeters on the top. So they look like those old WEM PA speakers. And so he has a couple of those, and the Interstellar's designed very much to look like an old sort of WEM style PA head. So it's just a big chunky head that goes on top. Actually, it's the guts of it are very much based on the ABM, just the ABM 600. So it is. My cat is going crazy loud out here. Can everyone hear that?
Yeah,
sorry. Ava, I'm podcasting. You will have to wait. That's okay. Let's shut her up. All right. Yeah. So the guts of it are very much based on the ABM 600, and he's tweaked a few things, but he's popped it in this big old housing to make it look like a kind of that WEM PA speaker sort of thing. But yeah, it looks fantastic. And of course, that's what we were doing. We were launching that. So we had a little bit of live music, and we had, Matt, you got to see some of that. We had Bernie Marsden come down from Whitesnake.
Yeah. So he's got his little boss pedal board with him. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. And we had Zach Starkey on drums, and then Guy Pratt played bass. And they did a load of cool, you know, just sort of blues standards, really. But it was very cool. And
sorry, Joe. Go on.
No, I was going to say also, you know, for some of the night, it wasn't just Guy Pratt who played bass. Dale Davis, who I guess is most well known for being Amy Winehouse's bass player, he jumped on. He played bass for a bit as well. Bernie Marsden was just going through one of the new 2-watt Ashdown Peacemaker Minis. Oh, it sounded great. Just a little 2-watt valve amp.
No, that's we should at some point deep dive into some of the Ashdown stuff, because why haven't we talked about the Shavo? You know, yeah. Everyone loves System of a Down, and he's got his own signature bass amp. Although I must admit, I think one of the coolest looking ones is the Head of Doom, Geezer Butler. And one of the images on the website is how you can run 4 amps into 12 cabs. No, sorry, 4 amps into 8 cabs, because that's what he runs live. And they're like, yeah, you've got to be able to do that. I'm like, that is fair enough.
Ridiculous.
But that's very cool. But although, from a guitar perspective, we've never really talked about the CTM-30. The classic magnifier looks very cool. 499. Well,
the CTM-30 is actually bass. It's a 30-watt bass amp.
Oh, right.
Although it is available as a guitar, like voiced for guitar, and I think it's the AGM 484 or something like that when it's called the guitar version. But I love those little chassis. They're like, you know, it's like a thin, it's almost a 2U rack thing, but it's, I don't know, it looks like an old radio.
Yeah, I think
it looks meaty. It looks like a bulldog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
oh,
it.
Oh, wait, what ones are you looking? CTM30s existed in a couple of chassis.
Oh, I'm looking at the custom shop, the UK custom shop on the Ashdown website that you probably look at daily, Joe. It looks like an old Fender head, which is why I assumed, not Fender, like Marshall head, which is why I assumed it's a guitar amp.
Where are you on the
Ashdown,
on the UK made custom shop?
Yeah. And then products, UK made custom shop, CTM30.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that one. I see. I apologize. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that looks like a bulldog.
Yes. I understand that. That is the little bastard chassis just redone in tweed. And we've popped the CTM30. The CTM30 normally comes in a much slimmer, like a 2U sort of chassis, like long and slim, but yeah, they did it in that tweed one for something like the 20th anniversary. And we still occasionally make bits and bobs with it, but it's a cool chassis, isn't it? I really like it. You can get like the little bastard 550, but unfortunately, yeah, the guitar one doesn't come in that chassis. I really wish it did. Actually, it's definitely the coolest looking one.
Yeah, that's a really cool little bass amp. I think that's wicked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. But yeah, it was great to hear Bernie Marsden make some great sounds out of that old PRS he was playing, and just a little board of very simple Boss pedals.
Yeah, I think an SD1, a CH1, and an RV5, I think, if I remember rightly. Nice. I think I've got all of those signed in my office somewhere. From Bernie Marsden from about 10 years ago.
Yeah, he was great. He was a lovely fellow as well, and just sort of, you know, like an effortless player. The Guy Pratt and him and Zach Stuck, it wasn't a planned thing. They just sort of worked out some stuff. I know it was essentially blues standards, but it was great to get to see them sort of make cool noises at the back of a tiny shop whilst we were all drinking Ashdown beers.
Yeah, I would say if anyone gets the chance, definitely go and see Sourceful of Secrets. It's a very good psychedelic show, and yeah, some great bass tones.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's pretty much all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds for an entire extra episode every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue, and $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers.
Goodbye.